Hello there, my name's David Poole and I'm the Associate Editor representing the Journal of Applied Physiology. Our paper today is entitled The Effect of Obesity on the Contractile Performance of Isolated Mouse Soleus, EDL, Extensor Digitorum Longus, and Diaphragm Muscles. The authors are an international team from the UK and Australia, Drs. Jason Tallis, Cameron Hill, Rob James, Val Cox, and Frank Seebacker. Dr. Jason Tallis from the Center for Applied Biological and Exercise Sciences at Coventry University in the UK will represent his team. Our expert discussant is Dr. Leonardo Ferreira, Assistant Professor in Applied Physiology and Kinesiology at the University of Florida in Gainesville. Jason, can you please give us a brief outline of your paper and especially point out the novel aspects of this approach for understanding the link between obesity and muscle function?
We argue that understanding the effect of obesity on skeletal muscle is important. Obesity is the largest regulator of metabolism and force is needed to power locomotion. So if we can't effectively use substrate, then poor muscle function could lead to a negative obesity cycle. And understanding the obesity effect on skeletal muscle may therefore provide a proxy for understanding other obesity-related health implications. Now, there's actually a number of studies that have looked at the effect of obesity on physiological mechanisms that may result in a change in muscle contractility. However, there's a lack of studies that have explicitly explored the relationship between obesity and contractility directly. So the aim of our project was to examine if dietary-induced obesity had a muscle-specific effect on the contractile performance of isolated skeletal muscle. And we used something called the work loop technique as a model to more closely replicate real-world muscle function. So within our study, we tested the contractile performance of mouse soleus, EDL, and diaphragm muscles and compared the results of an obese group to a lean control group. For the soleus muscle, what we've shown that in the obese group, these muscles demonstrated a significantly greater muscle mass and also an increase in the absolute force-generating capacity. When we looked at muscle quality, which we define as isometric stress and work loop power output relative to muscle mass, these measures were unchanged. We didn't find these results particularly surprising because due to the role of soleus as a postural muscle. So this may indicate that with obesity, we've got elevated body weight and this muscle is making some positive adaptations to deal with that increase in whole animal body weight. For the EDL, we also shown that obesity caused a significant increase in muscle mass. However, absolute force and work loop power output were unchanged. Within this muscle, isometric stress and work loop power as measures of muscle quality were significantly declined, as with the diaphragm, where isometric stress and work loop power were also declined in the obese groups. What we've shown within this data is that obesity could significantly reduce muscle quality. So we may be building bigger muscles of poorer quality to actually fulfill the same mechanical role. Other contractile measures we looked at were fatigue resistance, and our data actually demonstrates that all of the muscles of the obese groups showed a significant reduction in the ability to sustain power output. We also tried to underpin some of these changes in contractility by looking at some physiological mechanisms. So we looked at mice in heavy chain composition as an indicator of muscle fiber types. Now, interestingly, the reported changes in contractile performance occurred without a change in fiber type composition. So the results of our study indicate that obesity can significantly decrease contractile performance in a skeletal muscle specific manner. So we conclude that obesity may have significant implications for locomotory and respiratory function and may therefore contribute to a negative obesity cycle.
Leo, could you please remind us of the power of using experimental animals to answer medical questions in humans and tell us what you consider to be the most crucial or relevant findings of this paper?
What I think is one of the most powerful aspects of using experimental animals is that the experiments can be very well controlled, so we can avoid confounding factors that are related to behaviors that cause obesity, for example, the physical activity levels, as well as the dietary habits. Another powerful aspect of this study that we can do with experimental animals and not always in humans is that in this case, we can make direct assessments of muscle function. So we avoid factors that are confounding with regards to neurophysiological properties that can affect muscle function as well. And we really get a good understanding of what are the effects of obesity on muscle function. In my opinion, the most relevant findings were the effects of obesity on contractile function being dependent on the muscle that was tested. So as Dr. Tallis mentioned, soleus didn't show any effect, but there were detrimental effects of obesity on EDL and diaphragm. Another thing that is very important is that both isometric and isotonic properties are impaired. And typically, studies really focus on isometric properties as a way to define function or dysfunction. And sometimes we can be missing the big message that comes from studying isotonic properties. And I think this is a real strength of this study. And finally, one of the aspects that I thought was really interesting is that the diaphragm had a loss of maximal force, of maximal power, that exceeded the decrease in maximal isometric force. So that has greater functional relevance than just a loss of isometric force per se, because to generate lung volume, the diaphragm must shorten. And the loss of shortening properties is very relevant, and that can be addressed by the work loop technique.
Can you expand a little bit more, Jason, on this diaphragm effect? So what will this do to an individual or the individual animal as related potentially to a person and their ability to exercise, locomote, maybe undergo some treatment paradigm for their obesity?
Okay, so I think as a method of trying to reduce the obesity epidemic, we're recommending this population exercise more. Obviously, to exercise, we need to metabolize substrate. And if we want to metabolize lipid, we actually need greater oxygen delivery to these working tissues. Diaphragm is obviously paramount in controlling pulmonary function. So if we're reducing pulmonary function, and theoretically, we may reduce the oxygen that's being delivered to the working muscles, not only would we potentially reduce the substrate metabolizing capacity of those working muscles, those muscles are not also producing as much force and power as well. So from one angle, the locomotory muscles may not be as effective at producing power to cause movement. And on the other aspect, we may not be feeding the muscles adequately with oxygen in order to generate energy to provide contractile performance.
And of course, that effect will be over and above what you've demonstrated here because you have circulation isolated preparations.
Yes, possibly. So I guess we're only looking at specifically what happens at the isolated muscle level. Now, with obesity, there's a possibility that a number of related physiological mechanisms are also impaired, which could then further affect the contractile performance of skeletal muscle.
We've heard a lot about the decreased muscle quality. I'd like to ask Leo if you can comment, please, on what might be the specific mechanisms involved here.
Considering aspects of cross-bridge function would suggest that there are changes in the cross-bridge properties that are accounting for that loss of force. Perhaps a decrease also in the abundance of myofibrillar proteins, although the study suggests that that may not be the case because the total levels of myosin heavy chain appear to be unchanged with obesity. So that points us more to function of myofibrillar proteins. Another aspect that can be relevant is changes in EC coupling, specifically on the rate of relaxation, which some muscles showed a change in rate of relaxation to slow relaxation, and others, like the diaphragm, actually appear to have a faster rate of relaxation.
Could you please comment on the importance of using muscles that are close to their physiological working temperature?
The studies being done at 37 degrees at a physiologically relevant temperature will really allow us to understand what is the impact of obesity in this example on muscle function in vivo.
Jason, could you present us, please, with an international perspective, how you might relate these findings to the common man and our understanding and possibly the treatment of obesity?
There needs to be a greater focus on maintaining contractile performance for reducing obesity. There needs to be the design of interventions that actually look to improve muscle function. I think these results may provide a rationale for the sedentary patterns that are seen in these populations and possibly alleviate the stigma around obesity being linked to laziness. So if muscle performance is reduced, these populations may not be capable of sustaining physical activity.
Where would you like to go with this line of research?
I think, importantly, more work needs to be done aligning physiological mechanisms with changes in contractility. But I think beyond that, looking at the reversibility of these changes in contractile function that occur with obesity and weight loss would be very interesting. One of the current areas of research is looking at the relationship between the muscle aging response and to distinguish whether obesity actually exacerbates the age-related decline in muscle function.
Leo, is there anything that you'd like to add regarding mechanistic interpretations?
Obesity increases the frequency and work of breathing. And so when we see that the diaphragm is dysfunctional, that to me suggests that just increased activity, whether frequency or load, that might not be sufficient to negate the effects of obesity on muscle contractile properties once dysfunction is well established. So that may be a case where the diaphragm is particularly affected and it may not translate to lean muscles. And so one important aspect, a thought, the diaphragm may be more dysfunctional because it's exposed to greater paracrine signaling from visceral fat. And that may not necessarily translate to what is happening to lean muscles.
Jason, any closing comments?
There's a muscle-specific reduction in the contractile performance of isolated muscle, which can largely be related to a combination of real-world mechanical role of that tissue, fiber type expression, and metabolic profile. I think our results offer an interesting insight into the effects of obesity on muscle performance. But again, I think these data actually ask a number of further interesting questions. So I think to conclude, what we're demonstrating with our data is that obesity can cause a reduction in the contractile performance of skeletal muscle. And this could be a significant contributor to the negative cycle of obesity.
Leo, closing comments.
Two aspects that I would like to consider in closing. One is related to the fatigue properties of the muscles. So as we look at the paper from Dr. Tallis, what we find is that some muscles fatigue more and others don't change under these conditions. But going back to the preparation, it's a beautiful preparation to assess muscle function, but it's void of circulation. So perhaps the impact of obesity, high-fat diet on blood flow to the muscle, on oxygen delivery, is not being taken into consideration. So the study may even underestimate the effects of obesity on fatigue, which we might see then even worsened in vivo. Several diseases that are mimicked in different animal models, they actually take place with a background of obesity. That is an aspect that we must consider moving forward.
I'd like to thank Dr. Tallis for his extremely exciting paper and Dr. Leo Ferreira for his interpretation and expertise today, and all of you for listening. Thank you.